on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, focusing on D-Day today and Friday's 70th anniversary, thanks to the memories of E.T. Roberts, who hit Omaha Beach that day with the 29th Infantry Division. We heard how you had to ditch your flamethrower because it almost drowned you. You had to pick up a rifle from a dying soldier, and you came face to face with one of the most destructive, deadly, devastating scenes the world has ever known.
People could never, I can't even understand myself how I ever lived through the smoke and gunfire. He said you couldn't hear nothing. It was the smoke, it was strangling you, it was so thick, gun smoke. Just shell after shell and a big facing a cannon sitting inside of a wall that was firing out there and nothing. I saw little LCVPs come in there, not one soldier get off of it. That shell, the way they had it, big, the gun emplacement, they said had 4 foot of cement in it and sitting in the walls, just like going into a side of a house and look out the windows. The gun placements looked like that to me. I could see them firing all out of there. I told the guy on the Marine on or sailor, whatever he was on the ship, I said, open fire on him. Open fire on that guy there. He was the security right off the top. Not on where he ever went to. That's when we was going in. I could see that firing was taking place there. But when I got out on the beach and I got straightened up and got up off of the beach, I met about 7 people from the same company I didn't know even hardly. Got me a rifle and stuff and went on through there. And then I got wounded with St. Louis. I got changed from first scout to a squad leader, and we were completely replaced 9 times. So when they start to ask me, tell me names and stuff, I finally got to where I'm just going to call you soldier. And that's about the way I think today. People tell me names, and I can't think of names. I think of stuff like that, that so many names came and said, well, this is so-and-so, this so-and-so, and maybe 30 minutes he'd be not there. I've seen him last about 30 minutes in combat, and that's about it.
Certainly there on June 6th, and it's been called the longest day for a really good reason, especially the part of it you were in.
I couldn't get off of there. I was sick and had to lay there, and I got my neck straightened up, and that water was solid blood. I mean, it was just like a bloodbath going through it there. The beach, you couldn't walk without stepping on a dead soldier. You crawled and made your way around through there to get off of the beach, and finally I did. Got off the beach. I don't know. Some people say, how long did it take you to get off the beach? I don't know. And I don't think anybody else would. There's so much going on and everything that you couldn't even tell anybody your name, probably.
So it's definitely loud. I'm sure the smell was horrific. Obviously, what you're seeing is something that no one has ever seen or experienced before. And I'm just trying to imagine myself in your shoes. How did you keep going? Weren't you scared to death?
You're past scared. You don't even know who you're at or what you're doing. Think about fighting day and night. 27 days without ever coming off of the front line. And the only way it got you off is to get shot. And then... I was out 26 days back into combat. Went back to England and patched me up and sent me back into combat.
Another thing you mentioned about D-Day, you talked about finding 7 other guys from your company. For people who aren't familiar with how that works, how many people were in your company to begin with? How many from your company were supposed to hit that beach?
200 and something soldiers there in the company. I never did see any of the boys, the lieutenant or nobody. I'd never seen no one after that. So I don't know where the bunch of them went. One good friend that I did meet him, and he went in with me there. And last time I saw him, he had his heel shot off. We hit the ground, machine gun fire came up. He didn't put down his feet flat like you're supposed to turn your feet out flat. He stuck his heels up, he put his toes to the ground, and he shot his heels off. And I went over and talked to him a little bit, and I said, well, I got to go. We was moving at that time, And I had to go on and was trying to run them people out of there. And that's, I don't know whatever happened to that boy. It's just one of them things that happens in combat. I had another friend came in there that I knew, got acquainted with from Oklahoma. Oklahoma boy, Donald Crawford. He, the artillery shell was coming over. And I told him, I said, get your whole artillery. We hear, you can hear artillery coming over. And I said, go get your whole. And I don't know why he did, but he put a piece of tin over his hole. When he started to go down the hole, a piece of tin caught him on right above his forehead, just scalped him almost. I don't know whatever happened to that boy either. I just, things like that happens in combat.
Yeah, and we know what happened to you. We're going to find out the rest of what happened to you. I wonder, you talk about climbing into your hole, and as that longest day came to a close and you tried to find out if you could actually sleep that night and think about what the future might hold, were you able to sleep? How could you possibly sleep after a day like that?
We don't know when we slept. I mean, I've asked some guys, they know when they slept, but not a combat boy that was in there and hit that beastie day. If they'd tell me when they slept, I would sure like to talk to them and understand how they would sleep, because I never remember sleeping. I think I sleep with my eyes open. That I believe that's the only way we did sleep. And another thing, when you get replacements in that way, and you talk about sleeping, you don't know. The guys you train with, you could trust. I mean, he'd say, well, you go ahead and go to sleep, and I'll pull guard duty while you sleep. But at nighttime, when you set up to get some rest, and you say, okay, you sleep a while, and I'll sleep a while. You go to sleep, you wake up, and he's asleep too. When he might have been a butcher or a candlestick maker or whatever, you don't know what they are when they come into combat replacements. They're not trained like we were trained to fight, and it's very scary to be in combat with people like that.
And obviously you had a close call just getting off the Higgins boat, hitting the beach. But for the rest of that day on Omaha Beach, the bloodiest day of that invasion, the bloodiest spot of that invasion, how close did gunfire, artillery, or any of that come to you personally?
I could hear it whistle above my ears. I've heard shells sing beautiful song right beside my ears, bullets and stuff. And just look, when I got wounded, there was one went off my helmet, one hit me in the shoulder, and three went through my field jacket. So, and the flame hit me right in the face. I faced the face with one. And what happened, the kid that was one of the replacements was there. He was hollering at me, said, the soldier said, get this guy off my back. They'd done come over the hedgerow and got on his back, and I turned to get his back, and this one come over the hedgerow with a burp gun. It came right down at me, and all I ever saw was flame and fire. And I didn't know I was shot for a while, and I kept trying to get my gun up. My arm was, shoulders cramping and everything, and blood was running all over me. And I was trying to get my gun up to shoot another one was coming over there. And then I knew that I was finished. So when I started out, I laid down my rifle and walked off. And I got back to the hedgerow behind me, and right at the, I started to go out the gate, there's a German pull down on me again. I thought, well, this is it here. And he saw I was bloody and sick and everything, and he let me go. So I went back, and that's when I had to go to England and patch me up.
Wow. So this is at near St. Lo. And this is how long after D-Day? This is a few weeks later, about a month later?
28 days.
And you hadn't been off the front lines at all during this whole time?
I had not. I've been right on the front line all the time. Yeah.
I have to imagine you were exhausted.
Well, I don't know if you'd ever get tired or not. We were trained. We were really, really were trained. And that's one thing about the, I can say, C Company that we trained there in England. 25-mile hikes, full field pack. And all that many and many a day and out on the amphibious training. That was one thing about it. We was in shape, and they had us all so mad that they'd clean us up. And Eisenhower and Montgomery, General Montgomery, that's a British big shot. Anyway, they lined us up, told us, well, we're going on parade, Eisenhower and them, we're going to parade by. This was about 4 or 5 days before the invasion was made. We went by Eisenhower and them. They're standing on a platform beside the road there in England after we went 25-mile hike. And he said, man, he said, take them down there. It is a slough down, not too far from there. Everybody knows what a slough is. It's old, muddy, nasty, new water and stuff. He said, run them through that and then bring them back through. They took us and run us through the slough and brought us back through there and said, now then, they look like combat soldiers. And we went home and had to work 5 or 6 hours getting ourselves all cleaned back up, because you had to come back out the next morning with shined up, cleaned up, ready to go again. And that's the kind of stuff they would put on you, I guess, to get your madness up or get whatever they wanted to get up to ready to fight.
So here you are. You've been on the front lines basically for a month, and you're in St. Lo, and you talk about this burp gun and people who maybe haven't seen one before. I mean, this is an automatic rifle, Schmeisser, that the Germans had that could fire rounds so fast.
They call them great little grease guns. There's like our little Thompson subs, they call them.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they are, although they're a little smaller. And they will spit some rounds out at you, yes.
So fast that they could literally saw you in half.
Oh, yes, yes. He thought he had it to center me, but he had it to side of me, luckily, that... And I was trying to punch another guy off of one's back there, and I'm sure that I got him off of there, but I don't know about this. The guy was shooting me at what I done to him. Or
how far away was he from you?
He was in slapping distance.
So from point-blank range, he's firing this gun that can pump out multiple rounds a second, and five of them hit you?
The fire was just blinded me. I mean, he's so close to me that he's right in my face, and I didn't have. In fact, he's further than my gun would reach, even closer to me. He just cut me right down me. If I could got to him with the gun, I could have punched him with my gun or something. But
it sounds like you were in a bit of shock.
Well, I guess I was, because there was so much going on. I was trying to help somebody, and then it all jumps on to me. When they start coming over the hedger on top of you, too, well, then you got to start doing something for yourself, and you're kind of off guard a little bit. That's the reason, I guess, the only reason I got out of that I always wanted to help other people or do things.
Well, it kind of sounds like someone somewhere must have been helping you, too.
I think God had a great hand in it, helping me, because I never was afraid. I always thought that I would be taken care of, and that's what I feel today, that God has a big hand. And he's not finished with what he wants me to do, and that's something I want to do. It's whatever he asked me to do today, I want to do it.
Amen. It sounds, I mean, I didn't live it, you did, and I'm trying to imagine it, but it sure sounds pretty miraculous that you survived that, a burp gun from that close range.
Well, if it had been in the center of me, I wouldn't have, but the way it was, in my shoulder, in my arm, and off my helmet and everything, through my field jacket, it didn't get no part of me, and in no other part but just that part. Which that's the reason I had to go out and then come back in combat. They have to go through that to swab it out and clean it, because when you get shot through your shoulders or wherever you get shot, it takes material, whatever it is you got on, that it takes it in there, and they have to go in there and clean that out.
Or you can get infected pretty easy.
You get infected. That's what they have to watch for a few days, gunfire. It gets infected very fast.
And there was another thing that you said when telling that story, that call it the hand of God or whatever, but you said another German saw you, had a shot at you, and didn't take it.
Standing one hedgerow back behind us, already that far back. I didn't know they got behind us that far. And when I started through the gate, I mean, they just got openings to every hedgerow, like where a wagon or whatever can go through there. And when he pulled down on me, I thought, well, that's it. I was walking pretty close there. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he let me go. But but I didn't have a gun or anything, or and he saw I was all bloody, and I don't guess I was walking too good, I don't know, but I know I was really a bloody and smell, it was made me sick, the blood smell made me sick, so they flew us back, they got us on a plane, flew us back across there. They've done put up, set up enough where they get a plane off for make a little airport there, and they flew us back with litter patients. It was just full of litter patients and wounded soldiers, that plane was. Fly them back to England, put them in the hospital, and go back and get another load. Like they had here in Bakersfield, that C-47 they had in here flying around in Bakersfield here. That's the same one, still had the old hangars and stuff in it that they hang litter patients up in that plane. And that's what we went from France to England in.
So he recovered in England from wounds that would earn him the Purple Heart, and he was right back into combat. We're going to get the rest of this D-Day survivor's story when Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch after this.